Welcome, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. We're going to talk about the first post-conviction polling for Donald Trump. We will talk about failed stock market predictions around Trump's conviction as well. Lauren Boebert's case for her election or re-election in Colorado has just gone completely off the rails, so I'm going to talk about that later. And then we will also cover some of the post-conviction insanity that has been plaguing the Republican Party and many other things today. So I'm glad that you are with me. Let's start with the post-conviction polling for Donald Trump. If it is to be believed, it is absolutely devastating. I know that we go back and forth about what the polling says about the impact of a conviction on Donald Trump's chance of winning. The reality is that the reason we go back and forth is polling seems to shift from time to time. But we now actually have had a conviction, 34 counts, guilty, felonies, sentencing is July 11th, and we now are starting to get data after he has actually been convicted. Not how would your vote change if he were to be convicted, but he's been convicted. What do you think? 49% of independents believe Donald Trump should straight up drop out of this race. One of the Axios reports, one of the first polls conducted since the New York jury found Trump guilty of falsifying business records, finds a significant minority of Republicans and independents want him to drop out. And a majority of registered voters approve of the jury's decision. This is devastating news for Donald Trump. This is Morning Consult. 54% of registered voters strongly or somewhat approve of the guilty verdict. 49% of independents say Trump should drop out because of the conviction, and 15% of Republicans say that Donald Trump should drop out. The polls found the race tied 45-44, basically Biden 45, Trump 44, which is wild. Axios includes a reality check. While they may agree with the guilty verdict, the poll found more voters think Trump should get probation 49% rather than go to prison 44%. That's pretty close. While, of course, it's ultimately going to be up to a judge, and we will talk later about what that would mean. So, you know, you can slice and dice these polls any number of different ways. The critically important part of this that is to be considered, and I'm going to make this case later on today. We're doing a little thing, today's show and tomorrow's show. Today, I'm going to steel man the case that Trump is going to win in November. And tomorrow, I'm going to steel man the case that Joe Biden is going to win. The point of these exercises is to show that it's going to be really close and you can find a seemingly obvious case that either candidate is going to win. But we'll get to that later. The point here is when the election will almost certainly come down to a few hundred thousand votes in a few states, we have to assume even small changes in voter opinion can make a difference. Before the conviction, we had some polling which said something, I don't remember, it was something like 70% of Republicans won't change their vote based on the conviction. And what was relevant about that is 30% of Republicans are willing to consider changing their vote. When some of these states come down to 20 or 30,000 votes, 11,000 votes, give me a break. That's more than enough to potentially make a huge, huge difference. So just because the numbers are small in some cases doesn't mean they can't swing an election. And when you see 49% of independents say the guy should drop out, we have to assume a large portion of that 49% is just not going to vote for the guy at the end of the day. So we're continuing to get more polling. This is just one of many polls, but of course, it's hard to find good news in the conviction. And later on, we'll get to some of the things that I tweeted and people's reactions. There is a movement that immediately after the conviction said, Trump just won this thing. It's over. Trump just won. The stock market went up on the conviction because of confidence that now Trump will definitely win. Is that possible? It's possible. Is there any fact-based case that there is now a better, stronger case to be made that Donald Trump is going to win because of the conviction? I find it really hard to find any evidence of that in the data. And at the end of the day, that's what I care about. It's the data, not just whatever opinion I can come up with. So first cut post-conviction polling, absolutely devastating to Donald Trump. Fox predicted a market crash if Trump were to be convicted. And then the Dow Jones Industrial Average on Friday had one of its best days of the year, climbing nearly 600 points. Take a look at this. This is video of Fox News guest John Carney from Breitbart saying on Thursday, if today Trump gets convicted, the market is going to crash. It could be thousands of 1,000 points or 2 percentage points. It's going to be terrible. Listen to this.
I want to get John in for one final comment. If there is a conviction, what happens to markets tomorrow? Very simple.
I think markets crash tomorrow if there's a conviction, but I think they will bounce back because, look, even if they put Donald Trump in jail, I think the American people will vote him into president. We will vote him into the White House right out of the New York City jail. It's an outrageous trial and people can see.
But if there's a conviction, you think there'll be a crash?
I think the markets will do very badly.
What are you talking about? A 1,000-point loss?
I think we'll see at least a 2% drop.
Okay.
Wow. What a strong prediction. The market will crash because Trump gets convicted. But then when people realize he'll be president from prison, that will have such a stabilizing effect on the country that the president will be from in prison, that then it will boost the market again at some point in the future. Well, you know what happened? The Dow didn't lose 1,000 points. The Dow was up almost 600 points on Friday, one of the best days of the year. So then what do? When their bogus predictions are contradicted by fact, they simply revise and find some new way to justify what took place. They reverse and check out the comments to my tweet here in a moment. People say Trump's conviction is giving confidence that he will win. And that's why the stock market is going up. I tweeted tongue in cheek with an image of the Dow climbing. As you can see, the markets are reacting very negatively to Trump's conviction. Of course, that's a joke. The markets reacted very positively. And without a shred of irony, nor dignity, I would add, some of the people responding to me saying, quote, probably because they think his odds of winning went up, to which I responded, hardcore copium. But more importantly, Trump's odds of winning seem to have declined since the verdict, at least based on new polling, which we discussed earlier. So, you know, I think the stock market is a very interesting tool to use because you can project onto the stock market. You can project your dreams, you can project your desires, etc. But the interesting thing about the stock market as a tool is that it's just numbers. You could just look at the numbers. And as many of you remember, Donald Trump made a prediction in 2020 that if Joe Biden were to win, the stock market would collapse. Everyone's 401ks and other retirement accounts would be worth nothing. And it would be a 1929 style depression. Of course, that hasn't happened. And in fact, we've seen in the stock market record after record after record all time high, which if initially MAGA people just ignored, when they couldn't ignore it, they started to say, well, the reason the stock market's doing well is because of the expectation that Trump is going to be president. Now, again, Trump is predicting if Joe Biden wins this November, you're going to get a 1929 style crash. The stock market will be in the toilet. It's going to be terrible for everyone's 401ks retirement accounts. In a perfect world, or even just in a sane world, no one would fall for that yet again. They seem to be falling for it again, based on the Twitter replies where people are saying the market is up only because of the belief that thanks to Trump's conviction, he's going to be president again, which I find extraordinarily difficult to believe as an explanation. And then finally, I do think it's important to mention, and I know most of you know it, but if I don't mention it when I talk about the stock market, people will get mad. They'll say, David, the stock market isn't the economy. I'm not claiming that it's the economy. What I'm claiming is that the behavior of the stock market is directly contradicting what the MAGA people have predicted and told us would happen. If Biden wins, it'll crash. It didn't. If Trump gets convicted, it'll crash. It didn't. Oh, well, it didn't crash because everybody expects Trump's going to come back and Trump is so good for the stock market. Except we've run the numbers. And if you go back as far as we have stock market data since the political realignment where Democrats and Republicans are more or less what they are today, stocks do better under Democratic presidents. So that's sort of like the final nail in the coffin of that hypothesis. So just not going well. The predictions really not going well. And we will ultimately see what happens in terms of a bounce back or not. And Trump's presidency later in the show, we'll talk about what those paths might look like. So let's take a very quick break. Still available, the Memorial Day discount on membership. If you want it, let me know. Still 30 or 40 people a day signing up with that code. If you missed it, if you want it, email info@davidpakman.com and say, David, please give me that code, sir. So many people in our audience have become fans of our sponsor, Ounce of Hope. Ounce of Hope is a cannabis farm that ships CBD and psychoactive THC products to your door anywhere in the U.S. This is federally legal. THCA, THC Delta 8 and 9, they have edibles. And now you can check out the brand new drink from Ounce of Hope for 2024, the Berry High 5 milligram THC Seltzer. It's the only 16-ounce THC seltzer on the market. It's only $5, a price no one can beat. At their cannabis farm in Memphis, Ounce of Hope sustainably raises fish to feed local homeless people. I've always thought it's a really cool operation. Besides the delicious seltzer, they have gummies, chocolate, Rice Krispie treats, caramels, topicals, oils, soft gels, you name it. Ounce of Hope grows, extracts, and formulates all of these world-class products in-house, so that you can trust the safety and quality of every product that arrives at your door. So whether you're looking for a little help sleeping at night, something for aches and pains, a way to unwind on the weekend, Ounce of Hope can help you out if you are over 21. And right now you can pick up their Berry High 5 milligram THC seltzers for $5 each at ounceofhope.com. No one can beat that price. And aside from their drinks, you'll get 20% off everything else when you use the code PAKMAN. That's ounceofhope.com. Pick up one of their THC seltzers for just $5. Use the code PAKMAN to get 20% off everything else. The info is in the podcast notes. One of our sponsors today is BetterHelp. I have long been an advocate of psychotherapy. Whether you have an ongoing issue, a particular temporary situation that's causing stress, I think most people can benefit from spending time with a therapist. Give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. There are so many benefits to doing therapy online. It'll work on your schedule wherever you are. No more waiting rooms and sitting in traffic or having to take 3 hours off of work to get down and back for a 45 or 50 minute session. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/PakmanShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/PakmanShow. The link is in the podcast notes. Many of us have bad habits we want to kick. Finding motivation can be hard, especially when life gets heavy and the bad habit seems to be what's keeping you sane. Thankfully, Fume is here to help you prioritize your health in a way that will not disrupt your daily life. Introducing Fume's award-winning flavored air device that is quickly becoming the leading alternative to smoking and to vaping. The point of Fume is to satisfy the hand-to-mouth fixation of some of these bad habits, which makes healthy change feel even easier. The Fume device is sleek, it's sophisticated, you can fidget with it. There is no nicotine here, only natural ingredients like plant extracts and oils. There's no electronics, there's no vapor. There is an amazing selection of flavors from the popular crisp mint to the adventurous black licorice and cinnamon hearts. Fume is delicious. It's subtle. You can keep using it without feeling overwhelmed. So start your journey today. Go to tryfume.com and use the code PAKMAN to get a free gift with your journey pack, which includes a Fume device, 3 core flavors of your choice, and a cleaning kit. If you are struggling to get rid of that bad habit, that's tryfume.com. Then enter the code PAKMAN for a free gift when you buy the journey pack. The info is in the podcast description. The David Pakman Show is primarily an audience-supported program. If you're hearing me say this right now, you're not getting the full experience you could be getting, which is the entire show every day, hours earlier than everybody else gets it, without commercials, plus the daily bonus show, an extra show just for our members every single day. I invite you to sign up at joinpacman.com. Take advantage. Everybody's doing it. No, we wish everyone were. We estimate half of 1% of everybody is doing it. But if we can push that number up to 1%, it does a lot for our financial independence. So consider grabbing a membership at joinpacman.com. As many of you know, radical and repugnant, reactionary Republican Congresswoman Lauren Boebert is trying to get herself reelected, facing very stiff competition. She was totally buried in a debate gone wrong, unable to beat off attacks coming not only from her fellow candidates, but even in the form of factual pointed questions from the debate moderator, Kyle Clark, who did a tremendous job. Kyle Clark is an anchor for Next on 9 News, and he did an excellent, excellent job at keeping Lauren Boebert accountable. Asked about the theater fiasco involving Lauren Boebert, she spits out a bizarre word salad and is confronted very effectively by Kyle Clark. Take a look at this.
That was about the softest reference that he could have made. But do you want to talk about the theater thing?
Sure. So, Kyle, I certainly have owned up to my night out in Denver. I've gone on that public apology tour, and I'm grateful for the mercy and grace that has been shown. But I'm not going to continue to live life in shame and be beat up by this. And, you know, I would like to go back to
We're not going to do that. You had plenty of time to answer the question. You chose not
sure.
to. That's fine. I just want to make sure.
And you have apologized for the theater incident. I certainly have.
And I just want to make sure. Did you apologize for the behavior that went on with you
and your date, or did you apologize
for lying to voters about what you did that night and the disrespect that you showed to service workers that night? What specifically were you apologizing
for? I don't believe there was disrespect. There were things that were absolutely taken out of context.
There's video of your interactions with service workers. I'm asking,
are you apologizing for the lying to voters? It's been reported that I flipped someone off, and I did not. So, I mean, I think it's been very mischaracterized. I'm apologizing for you, Kyle Clark, getting footage and releasing that and people seeing this in a very private moment.
Certainly. It was very important to figure out whether you were telling the truth.
You just had an interview recently with CityCast Denver.
Whether a public agency was lying about your conduct.
You just had an interview with CityCast Denver, and you were saying how disgusting it is to record someone without their knowledge.
Let's talk about the use of your marks in Congress.
Very same thing.
Not going well. Not going well. Lauren Boebert really struggling here to make any coherent sense whatsoever. At another point during this debate, Kyle Clark brilliantly points out that Lauren Boebert is taking credit for projects funded by bills that she voted against. Total blatant hypocrisy. And he calls her out, and it goes just as poorly. This is really a masterclass.
Knowledge.
Let's talk
and
about the use of earmarks in
very
Congress.
Same thing and released
members
it to the
request
world.
Funding for pet projects. That's what an earmark is. And some Republicans have rejected that process as like wasteful and corrupt and that kind of thing. Colorado's Republican Congressman, former Ken Buck, did not participate in earmarks. Retiring Republican Congressman Doug Lamborn did not use earmarks. Ms. Boebert, when you were elected to Congress, you said that earmarks were wasteful. You said they foster corruption. Mm-hmm. You said they're a way to buy votes. And then you decided to start using them, too. So let me ask all of you, show of hands, please. Will you participate in the earmark process if elected to Congress?
Absolutely.
That is a yes from Mr. Lynch, Mr. Holtorf.
On next year's
pardon
rules.
Me. Please allow me to say
yes,
these people's
sir.
Names, okay? Mr. Lynch, Mr. Holtorf, Mr. Sonnenberg, a no on earmarks from Mr. Yu.
It depends.
It depends from Ms. Flora. Okay. So I wanted to ask a follow-up question on the issue of earmarks. Ms. Boebert, you've repeatedly taken credit for projects in Colorado that you asked for funding for, but then you voted against the bill in the end. Bridge over the Roaring Fork River in Glenwood Springs, water treatment plant in Gunnison, I-70 interchange in Grand Junction. You're able to vote no and get the praise for voting no because you know that there are enough other Republicans who are willing to vote for those bills so they'll pass. My question for you is this, and just a short answer, it truly is a yes or no question. If you were the deciding vote, would you still have voted no and killed all of those projects in Colorado that you now take credit for?
Yes, and I would have worked for a
Thank
process.
You very much for
I would have
answer.
Worked for a process to get those over the line, but I worked to get those in, and I have had over 80 initiatives signed into law through the appropriations process.
I appreciate the direct answer. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah, she is on path to get absolutely smoked here. I mean, this is a disaster. I heard a rumor she's not going to be doing any more of these debates because it went so absolutely terribly. Here's just one more moment. And these are, they're all, if she wasn't such a despicably terrible person, these might get tough to watch. They're actually quite entertaining to watch.
We did have a very close election, but we also had 50,000 Republicans not to show up to vote. I do not believe me being here is making this a vulnerable seat. This is a huge move for conservatives in Colorado.
So just to be clear, Ms. Boebert, you blame Republican voters for the fact that you nearly lost a safe seat and not your own conduct.
When 50,000 Republican voters do not show up and think that their vote does not matter, that does make an impact on elections.
It's the voters' fault. It's the voters' fault that Adam Frisch almost defeated her. So a disastrous debate for Lauren Boebert. Switching districts, maybe also part of the disastrous mistakes that she's made. It is a wild, wild situation there in that Colorado District 4 debate. Rumor is she's bailing on future debates because this went so disastrously wrong. Let's get her out. That's the goal, Colorado voters. Let's get her out. I have received copious emails from viewers saying, David, is there any scenario in which the judge may just have to imprison Donald Trump when he imposes a sentence on July 11th? The answer is sure. There is a scenario in which it may be obvious that the judge's right action would be to impose Donald Trump, impose a prison sentence on Donald Trump. But the judge doesn't have to do anything. But using the terms of sentencing guidelines and historical tradition, it's conceivable that there is a situation where it is what the judge should do. So let's discuss this. What would be the points against Trump getting prison as part of these 34 guilty felony counts, bearing in mind that the range here could go anywhere from probation, meaning no prison time whatsoever, all the way up to 4 years? Well, the points against giving Trump any prison time would be he's a first-time offender. I know it's crazy. He's been doing a lot of these things, overvaluing, undervaluing, fraud, all these. But as far as a criminal conviction, he is a first-time offender. That's what it is. He may soon be a second-time offender, and maybe third, depending on what happens in the next trials. But he is a first time offender, at least for the time being. He's in his 70s. And sometimes, I mean, listen, age can be used as a consideration when it comes to sentencing. Commonly, for a single instance of FBR, meaning falsifying business records, that's what Trump's been convicted of in 34 counts. Sometimes for a single count of FBR, probation is the punishment, the sentence that is imposed. So there are certainly some points there which would say no prison time for the convicted felon, failed former president Donald Trump. Now, what about the other side of the argument? What about the side of the argument that would say, hey, you know what? It would make sense that this guy get prison if later the sentence is suspended or it's held in some kind of secure facility or whatever. Okay, we look at that later, but there is a case to be made. Number one, we're not talking about one count. We're talking about 34. Now, the counter to that is these all stack. So it would be time served concurrently. It wouldn't be sequential. So yes, convicted on 34, but because of the law, they stack and whatever penalty there is would be served concurrently. But needless to say, these are 34 counts, not a single count. Number two, Zero remorse. Judges can and do use whether the convicted felon is remorseful and whether they are owning up to their misdeeds in considering what the sentencing should be. And Trump's disrespect to the court through falling asleep and lashing out at members of the jury during the jury selection process and all of it. And then every single day on his way into court and on his way out of court and online on social media, attacking the judge and attacking the process and saying the judge is essentially a puppet of the political system. Zero remorse. And in fact, quite the opposite. That would be an aggravating factor for potentially a prison sentence. Number three, Trump convicted crimes related to our democracy. And I saw a really good interview that Norm Eisen did with our friend Brian Tyler Cohen. And what Norm Eisen said, which I think is quite interesting, is that the I don't know if I would call it impetus or desire or duty to hold Trump's autocracy in check may lead a judge to say, you know what, I have to impose prison here. It's the only way to support democracy and to keep autocracy in check. Now, some might say, oh, that's not for the judge to decide when it comes to sentencing. No, judges have significant leeway in what they use to evaluate what an appropriate sentence will be. So this truly will be up to the judge. I think the judge overall has been quite fair, but has also given Donald Trump significant leniency and leeway so far, particularly as we've seen with regard to the gag orders. Many other people, if they weren't elites and former presidents, after violating gag orders multiple times, it wouldn't be just $1,000 fine each time. At a certain point, it would be, I'm holding you for the violation of the gag order. You're going to spend a weekend. You're going to spend a night in jail. And the judge didn't do that. So at least we have some evidence that instead of being this Trump hating, get him at every opportunity judge, which is what Trump claims he has been, Judge Merchan has actually given quite a bit of leeway and leniency here. So could we have a situation where the judge feels, I have no choice, I have to give this guy prison? Yes, we could have a situation. Do I think that such a situation is particularly likely? I really don't. I really don't. Donald Trump, after being convicted, gave what I believe is his worst interview in history. I have never seen an interview this disastrous. The guy whose show I was recently on, Will Cain, he was one of the people interviewing Trump. It's pathetic. It is a pathetic brown-nosing interview. Trump denied ever saying lock up Hillary. What? What? Trump was constantly talking. He said to her on the debate stage, you'll be in jail if I'm president. But he denies ever having said lock her up. The audacity, the gall. Listen to this.
I want to follow up on what Rachel asked you, though, because I hear you struggling with it. I hear you say it's a tough question, a bit unsure. You famously said regarding Hillary Clinton, lock her up. You declined to do that as president.
I beat her. It's easier when you win. And they all said lock her up. And I felt, and I could have done it, but I felt it would have been a terrible thing. And then this happened to me. And so I may feel differently about it. I can't tell you. I'm not sure I can answer the question. Hillary Clinton, I didn't say lock her up, but the people would all say lock her up, lock her up. Okay. Then we won. And I say, and I said pretty openly, I say, all right, come on, just relax. Let's go. We got to make our country great.
Yeah.
And it would have been, think of it, you lock up the wife of a president of the United States.
But they want to lock you up over $130,000 of an accounting thing.
And a perfectly stated accounting.
Now, before we get to Trump's denials of ever having said lock her up, Fox News has all the money in the world. What is wrong with the audio? I don't know if you guys can tell. There is background noise. There's some kind of hum. And the interviewer seemed to be off mic. Like, how does Fox News, with the amount of money they have, they can't get an interview with a former president properly mic'd up? Now, of course, as I'm sure you know, Trump numerous times has talked about locking up Hillary. Lock her up is right. All this sort of different stuff. I do want to remind you, during the 2016 debates that we're going to watch about a minute here, remember this famous exchange where Trump straight up told her, if I were president, you'd be in jail.
You delete 33,000 emails and then you acid wash them or bleach them, as you would say, a very expensive process. So we're going to get a special prosecutor and we're going to look into it, because you know what? People have been, their lives have been destroyed for doing one fifth of what you've done. And it's a disgrace. And honestly, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Secretary Clinton, I want to follow up on that. I'm going to let you talk about email.
Because everything he just said is absolutely false, but I'm not surprised.
Really?
In the first debate, that it would be impossible to be fact-checking Donald all the time. I'd never get to talk about anything I want to do and how we're going to really make lives better for people. So once again, go to HillaryClinton.com. We have literally Trump. You can fact check him in real time. Last time at the first debate, we had millions of people fact checking. So I expect we'll have millions more fact checking because, you know, it is it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Harder to see that as anything other than lock up Hillary. And of course, if you want that exact language, Donald Trump said it repeatedly. Here is just one example. Remember this?
I'll tell you something, though. It is very lock them up. You should lock them up. Lock up the Bidens. Lock up Hillary.
Lock up Hillary. I mean, listen, we all know he said it time and time again, and it is yet another instance of extreme tendencies of these dictatorial authoritarian types. They will just lie. They will just, it's one of the defining characteristics of fascism. They tell you, you can't believe what you think you saw. You can't believe what you think you heard. I will tell you how to really interpret what you think you heard. And Trump just saying, nah, I never said lock her up. Trump on the possibility of arrests or house arrest or jail time, he suggests the public would hit a breaking point and wouldn't stand for it. Of course, alluding to violence if he were to get prison time.
But so that could happen. I don't know that the public would stand it. You know, I'm not sure the public would stand for it with a
tried house arrest.
I think it would be tough for the public to take. You know, at a certain point, there's a breaking point.
So alluding to the public would break. It would be a breaking point if they tried to imprison me. And then later, when the same topic came up, if you're not watching this, you'll not see a critical part. They asked Trump again about the possibility of prison time. There's the strangest, such obvious edit. Where, and by the way, the audio for Pete Hegseth is terrible. Like, it's so poorly produced. But there's a very obvious edit where Trump says, I'm okay with it, like if he has to go to prison. And there's an insanely abrupt cut, which we're left to speculate about, which I can only assume is Trump saying something so inflammatory that they were like, we're going to cut that out. Take a look at this.
When it comes to the legal maze that you're still facing, and yeah, the judge could decide to say, hey, house arrest or even jail.
It could.
How do you face
it could.
What that could
look? I'm okay with it. I saw one of my lawyers the other day on television.
And there's the cut. I'm okay with it. And then it cuts. The room tone sounds different. It's very obvious some amount of time has gone by. What was in those seconds that were cut? I don't know. Trump then says that more dangerous than Putin are Americans who don't support him. Think about that. Think about what it means for the guy who wants to be president to say an adversarial foreign leader, not the enemy. Americans who don't support me are the enemy. Your fellow Americans are the enemy, not Putin.
They're deranged. You know, I talk about the enemy on the outside and the enemy from within. So you have Russia, you have China. But if you have a smart president, you always handle him quite easily. Actually, we have a lot of advantages. But the enemy from within, they are doing damage to this country.
The enemy from within, the people who just won't lay down and support Trump, they are really the people you have to watch out for. And Trump even doubling down on this, telling the poorly mic'd Fox and Friends crew, China and Russia aren't the problem. The problem is inside the country.
People don't want to be impeached. They don't want to be indicted by these scoundrels, who are much more evil than people. I'm telling you, China and Russia, they're not the problem. We have a problem from within that's really bad. So he let us down. The key to really good government, where we had like Lighthizer and so.
Your neighbors could be your family. They might be your friends, your coworkers. They're voting Biden. They are the real enemy, spoken like a true authoritarian dictator wannabe. Now, the topic of deportation came up during this sort of worst interview in history. And it's a completely unintelligible thing from Trump where he says, I'm going to do the big deportation. And listen, even though I can't understand everything Trump's saying here, it's sounding really scary.
Time. Now, I'm going to do the big deportation,
yeah,
the biggest ever. Eisenhower did the biggest.
Huge.
This will be bigger. But it's a very tough thing. What they've done to our country is unthinkable. that they could do this. And so many other things. I mean, going to New York, the kids can't have Little League games anymore. It sounds so trivial, right?
Why?
Because the migrants are living on the fields. They have all tents.
I like the hostess, like, they can't have Little League games. Why? I haven't heard of that.
Play around the tent.
How can you implement deportations, and do you think the public will have the appetite, the stomach, for watching deportations on their television screen?
Well, that question is so great and so tough, because, you know, the radical left is going to start saying, oh, absolutely, look, so you'll get rid of 10 really bad ones, and one, you know, beautiful mother who they think is guilty of something, and maybe she is, maybe, and it'll become a story.
I love that. You know, 10% of the people we get rid of will be absolutely innocent, or we don't know whether they did anything wrong. Maybe she did something, maybe she didn't. And the liberals are going to get all worked up about 10% of the people we deport just being absolutely not a problem whatsoever. Wow. Wow. And then finally, Trump bringing out the greatest hits. If Biden wins, we're going to have a 1929 style depression. Will any of the Fox and Friends hosts have the testicular or ovarian fortitude to say, but Mr. President, sir, you predicted that in 2020 and it didn't happen? Or will they shut their mouths and nod along?
And if I didn't throw money at COVID, we would have had a depression like in 1929. And if I don't win, you're going to have a depression like in 1929. You know, one of the, I'll just say Scott, one of the greatest analysts on Wall Street considered maybe.
Anyway, so that didn't happen. Predicted it in 2020. All-time high after all-time high. I believe the most ridiculous interview I've seen Trump give. Let me know what you think. Let's hear from a sponsor or two. Make sure you're subscribed on YouTube at youtube.com/TheDavidPakman Show. It's the same dilemma every year for Father's Day. What do you get the man who already has everything and says, I don't need any gift? Put down the slippers, step away from the necktie, and get Dad something that he will actually love, an Aura digital photo frame. Our sponsor Aura makes stunning Wi-Fi connected digital frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. If you're giving Aura as a gift, you can even personalize it with preloaded photos and memories. I gave one of these to my dad for last Father's Day, mentioned it on the show. I recently gave my mom one of these for Mother's Day, and I put pictures of the baby up from wherever I am. They pop up on the digital picture frame. It's great. And my favorite part is that you can put pictures on without even unpacking the frame. So it's still ready to be opened up, but with pictures already on it. Now, both I and my dad can add and remove pictures remotely using the app. You also get unlimited storage on the cloud. And right now, Aura has an amazing deal for Father's Day. Go to auraframes.com/Pakman and use the code Pakman for $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. The link is in the description. That's auraframes.com/Pakman. Then use the code Pakman at checkout for $30 off and free shipping. The info is in the podcast notes. Terms and conditions apply. As I've told you before, anybody claiming that it's obvious that either Donald Trump or Joe Biden will clearly, easily win the presidential election in November, they're not telling you a story based in fact. Online echo chambers are everywhere and we're susceptible to them. And over the next couple of days, I will first make the strongest possible case that Donald Trump is obviously going to win. Tomorrow, that Joe Biden is obviously going to win. And the point here is to understand that depending on which echo chamber you're a part of or what you want to believe, you can make a seemingly ironclad case that November's outcome is obvious, when in reality, this election is going to be close. So this is a thought experiment. It will almost certainly come down to about 250,000 or so votes in 3 to 5 states. It truly could go either way. What is true is that the 2024 election is unprecedented. The presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump is a former president, lost re-election once already, was indicted 4 times since leaving office, has been found guilty of 34 felonies where he is pending sentencing, while heading towards a rematch against the man who defeated him almost 4 years ago, the current president, Joe Biden. But it would be a mistake to assume that the outcome of the 2024 race will be decided by Trump's criminal trials. The trials will be a factor. The post-conviction polling doesn't look great for Trump, but most people are not following the nitty-gritty as closely as we are. Some people don't care that Trump is on trial. Others could be pushed more strongly towards Trump. So today, I'm going to make the strongest possible case for Donald Trump, and tomorrow I will do so for Joe Biden. So let's start with the polling. According to both 538 and Real Clear Politics polling average, Trump is leading. According to the New York Times, Trump is leading in five critical swing states: Pennsylvania by 3, Arizona by 7, Michigan by 7, Georgia by 10, Nevada by 12. Joe Biden won all five of those states in the 2020 election. Don't forget the Electoral College. In 2020, Joe Biden won the popular vote by 4%, but he nearly lost the election electorally anyway. Biden's most recent State of the Union address was strong, but his approval rating has actually declined since then by a point. And despite nonstop legal turmoil, Trump still has a higher approval rating than Joe Biden. Hillary Clinton, one of the weakest and most disliked candidates in modern American political history, had a higher approval rating in May of 2016 than Biden currently has, the number from the end of May 2024. These are not numbers that look good for Joe Biden on polling. Then we go to the economy. What about the economy? It's pretty good. It is true that presidents tend to get reelected when the economy is good. But the problem is that half of the country currently believes we are in a recession. It's not true by any metrics, but that is a disaster for President Joe Biden if it is what half the country believes to be true. Most Americans say the economy and inflation are the most important issues determining who they will support for president in November. And according to an Ipsos poll, the average American voter prefers Trump over Biden on the economy by a 14-point margin. Now, it's also true that while we aren't in a recession, the economy is not perfect by any means. Much of the country is right to be dissatisfied with Bidenomics. Per USA Today, nearly 70% of Americans said the economy is getting worse, according to the poll, while only 22% said the economy is improving. 84% of Americans said their cost of living is rising, and nearly half of Americans, 49%, blamed food and grocery prices as the main driver. Top line macroeconomic indicators just don't tell the full story of what Americans experience daily. And we've talked about this before. There's a legitimacy to just what do eggs cost in my local community. Housing costs are up. Almost half of all renters spend more than 30% of their income on rent. Now, Joe Biden isn't personally responsible for every economic woe that Americans face. Many of these are systemic problems that go back decades. But Biden is the president, and elections, to a degree at least, are referenda on the national economy. Biden insisting that the economy is great, while statistically accurate, could be perceived by many Americans as being told you're too dumb to understand your own dire economic situation. And this could make the MAGA message more appealing. What about foreign policy? Although Trump's militarism is worse than Biden's, Trump has remained relatively quiet on Israel-Gaza, save some outrageous comment here or there, because he notices it's very damaging to Biden what's going on. This may prove smart for Trump. Despite supporting human rights abusers around the world and being enamored with dictators, expanding the military budget, sabotaging the Iran deal, Trump is nonetheless perceived as, quote, anti-war compared to Biden by some people, even though he has said, oh, Israel, you've got to finish your war, finish it, seemingly saying he doesn't care what Israel does to the Palestinians. The point here is Trump seems to get that most Americans are sick of expensive wars, especially ones that they don't understand or perceive to be unjust. And he will probably attack Biden for this the same way he attacked Hillary, because running against an unpopular war or military engagement is an effective thing to do politically. Now, there are pundits who minimize the significance of the recent protesters, for example, by suggesting that Biden's foreign policy ranks quite low among voter concerns. And that's true to a great degree. A frequently cited poll, the Harvard Youth Poll, shows Israel-Palestine is 15th out of 16 issues. Inflation, healthcare, and housing are the top three. However, the same poll also does show that Israel-Palestine is, quote, a priority for 37% of likely Democratic voters. So when you put it that way, it is more significant than simply it ranks at the bottom. There are people who care about it. This is, of course, just one poll. We do have other metrics that we can look at. According to the New York Times, 13% of voters in swing states who voted Biden in 2020 say they will not vote for Biden this time, specifically because of Gaza. So the question is, even if it is not a high priority for a significant number of voters, when it's expected to be this close, how many votes can Joe Biden afford to lose over this issue when we expect this electoral race to come down to, you know, 250,000, maybe 500,000 votes in 3 to 5 states? So let's not underestimate the political instincts of Donald Trump. Does Trump care about Gaza? No. Is he actually anti-war? No. Trump is a sociopath who will say anything to gain power, but he sees how to cynically try to take advantage of the discontent that exists with Joe Biden. So what about Biden as a candidate? Donald Trump has a clear message that inspires voters. MAGA, Agenda 47, Project 2025. It's all horrible, dangerous, authoritarian stuff, but to his base, it's persuasive, and they think of it as a policy agenda. According to a Pew Research poll from 2020, 56% of Americans who voted for Joe Biden voted for him because he is not Trump. That worked in 2020, but are we confident that not Trump will work again? According to a Wall Street Journal poll, 40% of registered voters say Biden has a, quote, strong record of policy achievements, while 51% believe Trump has a strong record of policy achievements. Insane. But if they believe it, that's what matters. Hilariously, despite shuttling between criminal trials and bizarre fundraisers at Mar-a-Lago, Trump is more active on the campaign trail, doing more interviews and rallies than Joe Biden over recent months. So here's the bottom line. Trump could win, and I've laid out a case for how one could argue Trump has the advantage here. 2024 could look a lot more like 2016 than 2020. In 2008, and to a lesser degree in 2012, Barack Obama won because he excited people. In 2016, Trump won because he used pseudo-populist rhetoric that excited enough blue-collar workers in swing states that Hillary Clinton didn't pay enough attention to in those final months before the election. In 2020, people hated Trump due to his mismanagement of COVID and the global shame that he brought upon the United States, and they were excited to vote him out. But now Joe Biden is the incumbent. He faces some of the lowest approval ratings of his presidential tenure. He's currently losing 5 swing states. He's angered a slice of the left over his handling of the Israeli-Gaza conflict. So Trump can absolutely win this thing. And this is the strongest case possible to make for Trump's inevitability in November. There is another case to be made. That's the case for President Joe Biden's reelection. Remember, what we're doing is these are theoretical cases. I am steel manning Trump and then Biden's paths to the White House. Tomorrow, we are going to make just as strong a case that it is Joe Biden who has the clear and most direct, unobstructed path to victory. We will then evaluate which one rings the truest. And the whole point here is anyone who thinks either candidate has this in the bag is making a very risky conclusion, because it will almost certainly be unpredictably close 250,000 to 500,000 votes in 3 to 5 states. So we've made the case for Trump. We'll take a quick break. Tomorrow, I will make the case for Biden's path to victory. It's important to me that any supplement I take is of the highest quality and freshness. And that's why I've been turning to AG1 for years. Unlike other vitamin brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing for purity and potency. It's tested for 950 contaminants and banned substances, while the industry standard is usually to test for only 10. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certifications out there. And the whole reason I drink AG1 is it just is simple. It simplifies everything. It's a scoop a day. I get my vitamins and my minerals, and that's all I need. And the probiotics in AG1 are something I'm particularly glad is there. So AG1 just replaces the vitamin bottles, the digestive aids, all of the things that you might otherwise be taking individually. It's quicker. It's more cost effective than buying everything individually. You can go to drinkag1.com/Pacman to get a free year supply of vitamin D and K, plus 5 free AG1 travel packs. That's drinkag1.com/Pacman. The link is in the podcast notes. Failed former president and now convicted felon Donald Trump's speech after being convicted was an absolute sweaty and disheveled mess. Trump completely incoherent, hair doing something very strange, looking haggard and disheveled, soaking wet by the end of the speech. And without that teleprompter, this guy really, really struggles. Trump completely incoherent. And I dare you to make sense of what he's saying here.
Bragg's people protested and the judge knocked him out, said you can't testify. He actually said you can't testify for anything having to do with the trial. You can say what the federal elections is. Well, that doesn't help. Everybody knows that. But you can't.
Guys, you can say what the federal's elections is. Don't you get it?
Testify. So essentially, he wasn't able to testify. Other people weren't able to testify. But with these people, they were able to use people salacious. By the way, and nothing ever.
They were able to use people salacious. Don't you know what federal's elections is?
Happened. There was no anything. Nothing ever happened and they know it. But they were salacious as they could be.
Yep. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I genuinely don't know. Now, he did address to some degree why he didn't testify. Why didn't he testify? We know the real reason. The real reason is he would immediately perjure himself. There is no story that is an alternative explanation of the facts that would not be a lie that Trump could have told. Here is Trump, I guess, trying to explain why he didn't testify.
So you're going to call it. Now, I would have testified. I wanted to testify. The theory is you never testify because as soon as you testify, anybody, if it were George Washington, don't testify because they'll get you on something that you said slightly wrong and then they sue you for perjury. But I didn't care about that. I wanted to. But the judge allowed them to go into everything that I was ever involved in, not this case, everything that I was ever involved in, which is a first. In other words,
we don't even know what he's saying, but it's not true. He could have testified. He would have been able to explain his version of events. And if it would have been true and maybe useful in some way, it would have been advisable for him to do it. Of course, every one of his lawyers knew it would be a complete and total disaster. Trump then talking about whether he was a bad boy. This speech getting so strange and everybody cuts away from it. Eventually, you'll see in a moment. It's wild.
The judge allowed them to go into everything that I was ever involved in, not this case, everything that I was ever involved in, which is a first. In other words, you could go into every single thing that I ever did. Was he a bad boy here? Was he a bad boy there? And my lawyer said, what do you need to go through? And all you wanted to do is testify simply on this case.
My client has been a very good boy, Your Honor, please. Trump says that his witnesses were literally crucified, by which I assume he means figuratively crucified, although I don't know what Trump is claiming here.
As far as the trial itself, it was very unfair. We weren't allowed to use our election expert.
Right.
Under any circumstances, you saw what happened to some of the witnesses that were on our side. They were literally crucified.
by this man who looks like an angel, but he's really a devil.
There you go. He looks like an angel, but he's really a devil. Sounds like the good first verse for some kind of heavy metal song. And then a confused Trump repeats the same thing 15 minutes apart about a Daily Mail poll. You'll see, if you're watching, you'll see the clock in the upper left go from about quarter past 11 a.m. to half past 11 a.m. Trump just tells the same story again, has no idea what he's talked about, rambling aimlessly, no memory of what he said 15 minutes earlier.
Because I just see a poll just came out, the Daily Mail. That right. was the first one, came out, was done last night right after the verdict, where I'm up 6 points. 6 points from what we already were. We were leading fairly substantially.
Right.
We're up 6 points in the Daily Mail poll. Now, maybe other polls come out and it says something differently. A poll.
Okay, so now it's 13 minutes later.
Just came out. The first poll, I don't know, maybe others will be bad. But a poll just came out a little while ago. The Daily Mail. Does anybody read the Daily Mail? It's very good. They have a good poll.
Yeah.
At least I like it today. And the Daily Mail just came out with a poll. And it has Trump up 6 points in the...
Okay, so 13 minutes earlier, he had already talked about that. This is getting really bad. And so the networks start dumping. CNBC is the first network to dump out of this fiasco.
Things. Hush money. It's not hush money. It's called a non-disclosure agreement. And most of the people in this room have a non-disclosure agreement with their company. It's a disgrace. So it's not hush money. It's a non-disclosure agreement. Totally legal.
By the way, why he says disclosure? Disclosure.
Totally common. Everyone has it. And what happened is...
You've been listening to former President Donald Trump speaking at Trump Tower, reacting in a broader way to the...
I love the characterization. They don't know how to say it's a completely aimless rant. So she says he's reacting in a broader way. Yes, by talking about polls and who knows what else. CNN then cuts it and refers to the entire thing as a rant, and also says that without his prompter, Trump sounds disjointed, which is certainly charitable.
It's very bad for friends and businesses, but I'm honored to be involved in it because somebody has to do it, and I might as well keep going and be the one.
Right.
But I'm very honored to be involved because we're fighting for...
All right, we're going to continue to monitor Donald Trump and his remarks. He's making very, very strong statements, and we're going to have a fact check on those statements coming up shortly. Daniel Dale is standing by. Aaron, we're listening to the former president of the United States say, and I'm quoting him now, "We are living in a fascist state." He refers to the trial as a scam, a rigged trial.
Yeah.
He says he would have loved to have testified. He could have testified. It was his decision not to testify. He said, quote, "I would have loved to have testified." And then he went over, went after some of the witnesses, including Michael Cohen, for example, potentially a violation of the gag order that has been imposed by the judge against him. Aaron, we're going to continue to listen to what the former president has to say, but clearly, without a teleprompter, he's going off the cuff. He's railing against almost everything.
Yeah, and Wolf, you know, the fascist state, of course, the line that stands out. But as you point out, the...
I love that. He's against everything. I love that. He's railing against almost everything. It's genius. Oh, man. Wolf Blitzer with it. Like, the fact that he's so serious makes it so good. And then eventually MSNBC relents as well. And it's like, we got to fact check some of this stuff.
This is a case that should not have been brought. I watched Andy McCarthy say this is a case that should not have been brought. And that was this morning.
We'll keep an eye on this press conference. Donald Trump in his first real news conference, you could call it, following his guilty verdicts, 34 counts, all guilty. And so now he is railing on the justice system, railing on the judge, and continuing to say many of the similar things we heard throughout the trial. It's important for us to at least fact check some of them at the moment.
We couldn't possibly fact check all of it, but we're going to try to at least fact check some of it. And then here's like the sort of cherry on top. Even on Fox News, their anchor is like, they said it would be a press conference, but he's like not really taking questions.
November 5th is the most important day in the history
of our country. Thank you very much, everybody.
So the president talked for about 40 minutes. We were expecting the former commander-in-chief, Donald Trump, to take questions. This had been billed as a news conference and that reporters would be at least available. There would be the former president for their questions.
It didn't happen. It didn't happen, Harris, unfortunately for you and for everybody else, I guess, because I was hoping to see some questions. So what a wild event, and every network struggling to understand what that was. Not a stable genius at this point in time, that's for sure. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Here is a caller who really got me with this one. Listen to this.
Hey, David, why are your odds so close together? Like you're... the asymmetrical dimensions on your face. You look stupid.
Well, you know, I think the only serious answer I can give to why my eyes are where they are on my head is genetics and heredity. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how else to explain such a thing. But I think the final message, which is the guy just thinks I'm stupid. That's really the key here. So really got me with that one. I don't know how we will continue. Okay, we have a great bonus show for you today. We will talk about the Mexican presidential election in which the first woman Jewish socialist will become president of Mexico. We will talk about the reversal of Trump's position on TikTok as he now is on TikTok and is trying to get attention on TikTok. And we will also talk about the apology that has come forward from the publisher of the 2000 Mules election conspiracy movie. It is something else, something else. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Sign up at joinpacman.com. I will see you then, and I'll be back tomorrow with a new show as well.